Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more. Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills. Accelerate your team's impact and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with Renee Hill about the haunted Rose Opera House. It's interesting because, I mean, a lot of this stuff, when the equipment is being experimented with or manufactured or tested, I mean, you're talking about energy here, and it makes you wonder, you know, at the end of the day, what is it going to look like? But in simplistic views, I mean, you could sit there and kind of take the Walter White approach to it and hook up, you know, 30 car batteries and somehow project energy into some direction. And then you have to wonder, well, you're pushing all this energy there in one area. Would that be helpful? Would that be, you know, something? And it sounds silly, but it almost seems like portals, they feed off of some energy, like you were talking about with lightning and things of that nature, where if it could be simulated in some sort of man-made way to the force level that it seems to use when nature is presenting options, could then we manually open this stuff up with something, you know, like linking up 30 car batteries, even though
the batteries, Tesla.
Yeah.
When he made the coil, there's stories and findings from him in his writings that he was hearing voices.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was working with a massive amount of energy. Mm-hmm. And that's some of his findings is hearing stuff.
Yeah.
And hearing talking. So that's kind of interesting too, to be like, okay, you have this genius.
Yeah.
Who's working with large amounts of energy and he's hearing things and going, okay, this is interesting. So
yeah,
I think it's, you know, possible with time and, you know, inventions and all of us paranormal out there, people in the field that have such an interest in trying to figure it out. And I think they might get there someday.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very exciting to see how all of that evolves. Take me to where you first heard about the Rose Opera House and you developing an interest going, I think I want to go check this place out. How did that start for you?
It was a complete accident, and I am so glad that it was, because I was taking a trip with Tammy and Jason, meeting them. They were on a 2-week tour across the United States doing, you know, all these locations, famous locations like, you know, Waverly Hills and the Hall's Bar Dam and all this stuff that people, you know, have on their bucket list. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what, I can come up for the weekend and join you. And we were doing Brushy Mountain State Penn. We were doing West Virginia Penitentiary in Moundsville. In between, we had a day. And us crazies that just, like, we're out here, we're going to do it. Let's find something for that night in the middle. I started looking online for a location that was in between Brushy Mountain and West Virginia Penitentiary. And that was available that night to investigate. And found that popped up with a Google search, and I started researching it, and I brought it up to them. I said, it's $25. And we were more than delighted when we got there, to just hear the owner's history, to see the place, to have it all to ourselves for the night, you know. And he just locked the door and left us there. It was like, throw the key in here when you're done. And, just old Southern charm and hospitality. And, just stumbled upon it, and it is a gem. It is definitely a gem that I would recommend anyone put on their list to check out for sure.
What was it like for you emotionally when you walked through those doors? Like, how did it feel knowing, you know, obviously you had a little bit of knowledge of the place, having done a little research, but there's obviously, you walk into any building and it gives you a feel. It gives you kind of a sense of what it is. It is that environment. What was that place for you the first moments you stepped into the doors of it?
As a paranormal investigator, I was so excited. I love the history of a place. I love to see these buildings that are still there, that people are keeping together. It had a really happy feel to me. We were unloading our equipment, setting stuff up. We were playing 1940s music. I was being a goofball and dancing down the aisleways, like, you know, just trying to, if the spirits are there, show them you're friendly. Get that music going to kind of, you know, key them into, you know, something they're familiar with. You kind of use it as like a tool. Mm-hmm. And the mood there was really happy. Now that changed later in the night with my experience that we'll get to. But it started out completely just a really positive feeling when you walk through those doors. The owners are so happy and proud. It's always a place of fun, I think. It just really had a positive demeanor when you first walk in there.
What kind of expectations did you have going in to the Opera House for the investigation?
I really just thought, you know, maybe we would catch some EVPs. That's, you know, and if you catch anything more, it's always like an exciting little gem. But, you know, normally go into a location that has a lot of activity, you can normally for sure at least catch an EVP. So that's usually like my expectations. And I had the same expectations there. I feel it's like, you know, you're going fishing and mm-hmm. sometimes you have a good day and you catch that fish and you know, sometimes you wait all day and you catch nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at paranormal investigating. And so you just kind of go in hoping you're going to get that big one. And, you know, sometimes you do and don't. And I did that night. So
let me ask you this. When you go into an investigation, and this is interesting because it kind of ties into the way that we look at the dead. Sometimes I think we or many people forget that these were oftentimes living spirits or living people at one point in time, where if they were alive today and you're in a room with them and you have a positive attitude and it's happy and it's go lucky and everything is good, that can other people feed off of that. And the more positive people in a location, the more likely it's going to keep feeding. Same with being negative. If you're going into a situation and you have a horrible attitude and things are not going good for you and you're just not in a good place, other people can feed off of that too. And then that can happen. I think the same can be true with ghosts and spirits that are encountered in a haunted location. Do you find that to be accurate as far as the attitude of those going in? You said playing music and being jovial and fun. Does that lend itself to having a more positive investigation, one where you're trying to get some interaction and it stays on a, you know, an interesting, sometimes creepy level, but not in a threatening level?
Yeah, I really do. I think that, like, in our daily lives, our positive energies attract positive energies. And I think it's the same thing. Now, sometimes, no matter how positive you are, you're going to run into that one grumpy, angry person for the day.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, you're going to have that even if you come into a place with a positive attitude. But I do think that we go into places and we're positive and we have jokes, and the K2 meter, which is, you know, measuring magnetic fields, will spike up as it's almost like it's laughing with us. Mm-hmm. So I do think that it does, you know, you kind of get what you put out there. And if you're going to start talking negatives and trying to weirdly summon, you know, negative things, that you will get what you're asking for and, you know, what's around there. So I do think staying positive, I do.
And I want to hear about what happened with you, where the mood kind of changed. But I'm trying to think about how to word this. When you go into an investigation, what is the best type of attitude or way, you know, that one is portraying themselves in the environment to have a a good night or a successful night? Is it being overtly positive, almost kind of overdoing it? Sometimes how, you know, you'd see like an elementary school teacher being a little more positive than they, she probably would be just in her normal life when she's around her kids. Or is it being, you know, kind of apprehensive? I'm kind of scared, but I do want to find out what's going on, but I'm not trying to invite anything negative in. You see that, where it's just kind of a scared, I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't know what I'm going to get, you know, type attitude. And then you also have the negative approach where it's almost taunting. Let's bring these things out by, you know, almost anger, and emotional disruption. What to you in your experience has been the best way about going into an investigation with hopes of getting something out of it?
I always definitely the positive, for people that are nervous or scared, I always remind them that, because we're always afraid of what we can't see, mm-hmm. and it just causes fear, but it's, they're people.
Yeah.
So you just always tell everybody, they're people. You have good people, you have bad people. It's just people, and always remember that. And so I always act if the people are there with me. So introductions of yourself and your names and the nice to meet yous and the thank yous for being here. We always leave and we're like, thank you for speaking with us. And, you know, I think they like to join in our funny conversations. The more EVPs that we get mm-hmm. are not when we are sitting there and asking questions, but is when we stop for a moment because we've run out of questions and we just start to talk with each other and we're telling each other a story of our day or something funny that happened. And then when we play it back, that's when we get the most of the EVPs mm-hmm. is when you're not just sitting there saying, how old are you? Are you a boy or a girl? Are you, they're like bored. They're bored to tears. Like, yeah. like you would be too. So yeah. think about it that way of like, would you really want to sit there answering these same questions over and over? Just conversate like you're having a conversation, like you're sitting and having a drink with somebody and tell stories and you're, you know, you're there with friends. And yeah. that's when you're going to get the most activity.
It's almost, it's like they just want to join in the conversation as well. And they want to express their opinion on whatever is going on. Not the same, you know, list of questions that they're asked every single time. It goes back to treat them more like people than ghosts and you'll get more interaction. Let's go over to what happened in the evening where you said the mood kind of changed and you had quite an experience at the Opera House. Let's walk us through that.
Yeah, so what was interesting to me is I was in such a positive mood earlier, dancing and just so excited about having this location to ourselves and being locked down and not having any outside you know, noises or other people that you have to, you know, worry about contamination of your evidence. And that's always like, you know, such a paranormal dream to have the place to yourself. So mm-hmm. for my mood to change. So we started downstairs and we're doing an EVP session. We decided to move upstairs and the balcony, there's a lot of construction still going on. There was no place to sit. So we went around the corner to the segregated area. And we were only the fourth team ever to get into the segregated area because over the years, people had stuffed storage things in that area and you couldn't even get in it. He said it was packed, mm-hmm. You know, top to bottom. And we couldn't sit on the chairs because they were the original chairs and they were falling apart. So there's some stairs, very squishy stairs. And we sat down and we had our recorder running. And I was at the bottom step. Tammy was behind me and Jason was behind her. And we just started to, I had a K2 meter in front of me by my feet and we started to talk. And we asked a few questions and I was letting the spirit know to let me know that you're here. I have this light in front of me. I don't like to call it a K2 because they don't know what that is. So I just say, hey, you see this light, you come near it, I will know that you are here and that, you know, we can communicate through this. And, you know, and it spiked up. I said, okay, great. You're here with us. And they went away for a while and then it came back again. And it's interesting because the light is on green, yellow to red. And it's just always on green. If you get a little spike, it's like kind of yellow orange and then it goes up to red if there's a big one. all of a sudden it just stayed on the yellow to orange range and it wasn't going away. It was just sitting there. And I all of a sudden, and I've never had this overwhelming like this, got completely sad. And I didn't know why. It was so confusing to me to be like, why am I feeling this? And like I said, in 7 years of investigating, I've never had this happen before. I literally started to cry for no reason whatsoever. And I was, you know, I listened to the recording last night, and it was hard for me to listen to because you can hear the shaking in my voice. You can hear me starting to like sob. Mm-hmm. And it actually started to get dark. Like a circle drawing in. I was losing my vision, and I started to lose control of me. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but I was no longer like able to like speak or control or make a move or anything like that. And now Tammy behind me, she said, "That's enough. I need you to back away from my friend." And I remember her saying that, and the light went away on the K2 meter, and that circle of darkness in my eyes opened up. And I had to leave the area. It took me like 30 minutes, but I was feeling somebody else's emotions. Mm-hmm. That were not mine, that I had no reason for and I didn't understand. And if she had not have said that for her to back away, and that it did not, I don't know what would have happened next. In that, you know, and I've through my years of investigating, I've seen about two different people get what they call possessed. And when I was telling my friends about this, that are in the paranormal, they said, "Congratulations, you now know what it feels like to be possessed." So, and I don't know, I don't say that as a bad term. Mm-hmm. I think possessed is just, you are now, you're being taken over. Now they might just want to be sharing that information with you about how they feel.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying like, but that is the word that you would use, because you are no longer in control. Mm-hmm. Of your body. I was scared because I didn't know like what was going to happen next as that's happening and I'm losing myself. There's a moment of almost like you're frozen and there's nothing that you can do. I don't think it was negative as well. My Tammy said this as well. She said, "I think if it was negative, it wouldn't have backed away when we asked it to." And, that is a really strange event for me that I have never had happen before.
Did you have, I mean, obviously this is something I'm sure you've heard of happening before without it happening to you. Did you have any sort of fears or anything like that about the possibility of ever having that experience for yourself before having it?
I didn't. I knew like I've been scratched before at a location. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Like I knew it was a possibility. But you just never think that it's going to happen to you, almost like an auto accident or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like you just don't think that it's going to, you're going to be the one, because it's a rare occurrence. And, you know, seeing it happen in my investigations over the years to two people in other groups, and you're watching it, and you didn't know, like, you don't really know those people, you know, are they being a showmanship? Are they like, you know, being honest about it, you know, you're like, I do everything as a skeptic of, you know, are those footsteps really footsteps, or were we just like, evidence to me has to be very clear. But mm-hmm. I did see this happen to people. I did hear about it being a possibility, and now it's happened to me. And I'm like, that is definitely something that can happen to you when you're investigating.
Is it something that has made you more cautious? Is it something that's made you more, because I've heard this too, more curious about being in a situation where that can happen again? How has it affected you?
As of right now, I'm a little bit nervousy about it. And I was that way when I got scratched. I was like, okay, you're in a hobby that is serious. Mm-hmm. This is nothing to like play around with. You can, you know, you need to know what you're doing. You need to be able to protect yourself. And I almost stopped because how far can it go?
Sure. You know,
there was that like nervousness to it. And I'm kind of in, because this was really recent that we had just at the Opera House. And I'm still kind of processing that. But I think I'm going to do the same thing that happened when I got scratched. It was just be like, you know what? You were actually got to experience something that nobody else has got. You know 100% this is something that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt in your mind. And you got to experience it for yourself. And I kind of am honored in a way to know this, to experience this and have like no doubt whatsoever that these things can communicate. They can physically do things. They can, you know, to and experience that for yourself and just know 100% that this is real.
Yeah. Is it something that right after it happened to you, what, and you kind of you snapped away from it? Was it a quick snap away? Was it a, you know, a gradual, I'm starting to feel better, you know, like almost like a cough that slowly kind of, you know, works its way out? How was the transition going back to being yourself in complete control versus being possessed?
Well, what was interesting is that when I was listening to it last night and I was making notes of times things were occurring and things we were saying, you can hear us say, and I didn't remember till I had listened to it, but like 30 seconds or a minute before this happens, I say, "Ooh, it's got cold." And Jason behind me says, "Yeah, it's gotten cold. I'm getting chills." So it was interesting to hear that progression from the K2 meter to it getting cold, which you always hear about those cold spots.
Yeah.
And then this happening. So it's not just one thing. It was all these items together to create, you know, something. But the time frame was odd because I felt like I was crying and upset and sad for 3 or 4 minutes, if not longer. And when I listened last night, it's very short. It's like 30 seconds of me before Tammy tells that spirit to back away from her, that this is, she's too much, and it obliges. And I was like, wow, that is so weird. I would have never guessed it was such a short time frame, because my memory was a long time of this. So that was interesting, but it was a very slow coming out of it. When it backed away, I kind of wanted to get out of the area, but I didn't. I felt there was a reason and I needed to stay and ask if the spirit took that much effort to try to show me something or do something. I felt it was my responsibility to ask and be like, and you can hear me shaking in my voice. And I'm like, is there something that you want to tell me? Is there something that you want to share before we leave? And I just tried to kind of stay strong, stay there, not flee the area, and see if I can get any more like answers. And then we left, and it took me a good, I'd say 30 minutes before we could get back to investigating. I was kind of out of it.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, just like give me a minute." And I couldn't get out of it. It was like the emotion was still there and I had to shake it and get back to get that sadness. Like it was hanging with me as if I had just gone through something horrible. You know, you're going through, someone has passed away or you've gone through a tragedy, and it just was hanging with me where I couldn't get rid of it. And it was very slow to get all the way back to where I was myself again.
When you went through that experience and you look back on it, do you have any idea what the sadness was for? Why you were feeling that sadness? What the reasoning was? Because it's almost like the way I describe things like this is a download. Suddenly you just you have the emotions that someone is feeling, but you don't necessarily always get the backstory as to why you're getting these emotions. Do you have any suspicions, or have you been able to identify what the cause of the sadness was for the spirit that was sharing their emotions with you?
Now, it's all like a puzzle, because you're only getting, you know, bits and pieces of it. And then you, you know, conjecture to put it together and what you think it might be. But I always remember that it's your best guess, you know, scenario, because you're only getting flashes of information. So when we were in other rooms that, you know, are PS7, which is the radio, you know, sweeping through the channels backwards. We were getting things, kind of racist comments of separation and don't belong. And we were getting that type of word. So I was maybe correlating that to there's some type of racial tension. You know, maybe something happened in that arena just because of the clues in the other areas of the night. So that could possibly be the saddest, but it could be completely wrong. It could have been some other type of tragedy, and it would take more investigating to go back and get more pieces of that, you know, puzzle.
Sure. It's just amazing to have those experiences, and you're right, it is very much a puzzle that is all open to conjecture as far as what the meanings are. But I think deep down, the one who experiences where their gut goes with it is probably the most accurate than someone standing afar who didn't have the experience.
Yeah. And I really felt there was some type of sadness that was racially backed with being treated a certain way. And whatever came along with that, there was something hidden. Something had happened that was hidden. So maybe it wasn't reported to the law.
Yeah.
I feel like it was never said what it was. So maybe she never had, I felt it was female. I felt maybe she never had that, you know, the person that did something to her was never held accountable type of, those were the things that I was picking up through our other pieces of the investigation. And that was my gut feeling, you know, wrong, right. Those were my puzzle pieces. And that's how I felt.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Renee Hill about the haunted Rose Opera House. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for your support and thanks for listening.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.